Investor Brand Network, IBN, a multifaceted communications organization engaged in connecting public companies to the investment community, is pleased to announce the launch of the Stock to Me podcast as part of its sustained audio communications effort to provide specialized content distribution via widespread syndication channels. The following Stock to Me podcast is an Investor Brand Network audio production and may feature a client partner of IBN. Investor Brand Network may have been compensated for the production of this podcast. Please be sure to read our entire disclaimer for full disclosure. Thank you, and here today is your host of the Stock to Me podcast.
Welcome back, and thank you so much for joining us at the Stock to Me podcast, brought to you by the Investor Brand Network. Today, we are joined by Ian Rosen. We're going to talk to Ian Rosen a little bit about the monetization of media and other topics, including the global pandemic and how it's infected some of us in the way we look at business today. But let's first welcome Ian Rosen to the show. Ian, how are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, Ian. Thank you so much for taking the time to call in. I look forward to learning more about some great topics you and I have discussed before the show today. But let's first start with who you are and your background and what you're doing today.
Sure. My background is primarily in, what largely is called fintech, financial technology, and also media, specifically financial media. Many people in the space know me from my time at MarketWatch, where I was general manager of one of the largest financial news businesses in the world for several years. I then became an entrepreneur and co-founded a company called Even Financial, which my co-founder is now running. Even helps people get access to financial products like consumer loans and insurance and credit cards. And then I took over a company called StockTwits as the CEO. StockTwits is the largest social network for investing and trading with more than 3 million members, primarily making it easier for individual investors and people that are just learning how to invest in the stock market and related products to learn how to do so effectively and to learn how to even get started in doing so. And I left StockTwits in March, and since then have been working on implementing a thesis that I've had for some time around a way that financial media companies can more effectively serve their viewers and users and also become more profitable and more relevant in today's financial media and financial technology market.
Well, obviously a seasoned background, and that leads me to ask you some questions in regard to that. I mean, StockTwits, I'm a user of it, MarketWatch. Of course, we've all been touched by that company on the back end or the front end since it feeds so many different portals. But let's talk a little bit. You talked about moving on from StockTwits in March 2020, and obviously that's when the rubber hit the road for the global pandemic. You know, that's one of my questions I've been asking a lot of guests here is, have we had to tweak the way we think? Have we had to tweak the way we evaluate certain business practices? And here you are launching a new idea in March 2020. Let's talk about that time of your life and maybe the impact that the global pandemic had on the maneuvers that you made.
Sure. It's really interesting. And first of all, I'm very glad to hear that you're a StockTwits user. I'll have to see if the team there can get you some swag. But the pandemic, I think, has been obviously fascinating in both positive and negative ways. And it definitely has affected the way that we work. And it's made some businesses that are purely digital and serve their constituencies digitally or through digital means become much more successful, and obviously, unfortunately, those where that's not possible, for example, even just restaurants or doctor's offices or anything where you physically have to be present, it's been extremely difficult. I think for those of us in an office setting where we are, part of the information economy, what I have seen among my peers and among the people in our industry and related industries is that we're becoming exceptionally good at knowing exactly what was useful and what wasn't. I think that in most organizations, there were many layers of, well, we do this because we've always done it, and we go to these places or these meetings in person, or we have these connections between the different layers of the organization because that's historically the way things have gone. But when you remove all of the existing sort of infrastructure of how we work and you create many more friction points in order to do the things you used to do, then you can very quickly see the things that weren't required start to fade away. Can I just talk to this other person directly, or do I have to go through this other department? Do I need to be there in person, or can I do a video chat or a phone call? And in some ways, that's, in many ways, that's reduced friction, because you can talk to three different people in three different time zones over Zoom. And I don't know how we would be doing this without video conference or the telecoms that we have today. But you don't have to be there in person, whereas even a year ago, that would have been unthinkable that you would not do a meeting such as that in person. So I think we're the main takeaways I would say of that point are that in a very short period of time, we've all realized what the shortest path between yourself and your goal is, either within your organization or outside. And the other point I would make on that is that today we are still very much trading on, I'd say, the shadows of social capital and social connections. I mean, most people that I speak with, I either knew already, or I've seen them in person, or we've had, you know, a meal together, or we know someone that has, and it all feels very temporary. And I think that's allowing us to build connections or to maintain connections. But if this were to go on for a prolonged period of time, I actually think it's very difficult to build new connections in these ways. And if you're someone that's responsible for new sales, for example, or for, you know, building your own book of business or building relationships for later, then it's not nearly as easy to do so over a Zoom call than to go have a meal or a drink and the serendipity of the kind of connections you have with other people. So I think that's changed a lot, but that's progress.
Well, it is progress. And, you know, you bring up a couple of great points. One, we trim the fat. It's like Occam's razor. I was a finance and accounting major, so the class I loved on the side was philosophy, and I always took to that. Occam's razor was basically get down to the core of everything, and people were forced to do that for better or for worse. You bring that up. But also the hindrance it can be for those frontline soldiers, the book builders, as you put it. I mean, obviously, there are people that can do things in person that just can't translate in a Zoom call, and they lose that nuance to their process. So fascinating input, and I appreciate that from you as an industry veteran. So let's get on to your media monetization theory. Let's talk a little bit about what you're working on currently.
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the things that I've had the opportunity to learn over my last three roles, which is to say MarketWatch and then StockTwits, was the importance of customer acquisition, how do you engage with people, and the ability to connect different parts to that customer, right? So I think that it's become easier and easier and easier to build products that can serve a variety of needs. I mean, you could stand up a consumer finance company these days with, you know, AWS and all kinds of APIs and front ends, and I'm not trivializing the effort it takes to do so, but from a technical background, it's never been easier to build some of the certainly financial product-based companies that are out there today. There's APIs for everything. There's white labels for everything. And as a result, many more of them have proliferated. And I think where many of those companies struggle is in customer acquisition, because they're looking around and saying, all right, I have this great product. And most companies, at least in my experience, I'm a mentor for Techstars, and I work with a bunch of small companies. And my experience with startups, both as a founder and now working with them and an investor, is that they are almost always started by product people or technology people who have an idea. They think something should fit. They think something should exist. It's a new application of the technology. And that's why VCs like them, because it's something that's unique, and that unique piece of technology has a moat, and that's all very valuable. However, I think that the customer acquisition challenge is perceived as more commoditized than it actually is, and in a world where products can be relatively easily built and connected to different things, then the customer, whoever is able to, in a cost-efficient way, acquire customers, hold customers, engage their attention, for lack of a better word, own their time, because we're all on a competition for people's attention, those people are in a greatly, they're very well positioned. And those companies, if you look at the landscape of companies that have that at their disposal, very, very low cost or free organic customer acquisition and engagement, they look like media companies. Media companies, they occupy big street corners, virtual street corners, where tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions and tens of millions of people pass through every month. And those people are primarily being served in exchange for that content, or they're primarily looking at ads. And ad, the ad business is not has not been a very lucrative one for many of these publishers, primarily because the ad tech infrastructure has taken some of that money out, and because the move to digital advertising has taken a lot of the dollars out, and move to mobile has taken more dollars out, and all these things have affected publishers. And as a result, many of these publishers haven't thought, or they haven't been able, either because of capital or management changes or skill sets, been able to evolve into new business models, despite having what I would perceive to be the most valuable commodity, which is to say, the user's attention. So it's been my strong belief for many years now, starting back from working with MarketWatch, and then certainly Even, which was in that business, that if you can look at media companies which are primarily selling advertising, which is, I think, a not very efficient way of monetizing that user, not necessarily even serving that user in a way that's helpful to them, that there is an opportunity to think about new business models and connecting some of those products, those high-value products, where they actually are the thing that those customers are using, looking for, creating, and connecting them to the user experiences directly. And those are the things that aren't really happening today, except through middle-tier players in the ad tech infrastructure or related. So that's sort of the basis for it.
Well, let me ask you what your focus is going to be in 2021, but also let me revert back to that last question then. What needs to change, or what will be the impetus to change to make the big media companies capitulate to this new way of business?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's a matter of capitulation, and more as an upskilling and different changes to the way of thinking. I think historically, most media companies, certainly legacy media companies that weren't built for this purpose, they built a product, and that product was content, and that content was then handed off to a different division to be monetized, and that monetization could only happen without, you know, touching or thinking about or necessarily working with the content production group, meaning editorial. So I think what's happening now is the most successful, and I'll hold actually MarketWatch as an example of this, although it happened a little bit more organically. We had an extremely close partnership between the business, which I was responsible for, and the editorial group. And we would sit down and think about what are the things that our users want to hear about and read about and learn about. And then I would figure out, you know, okay, what are the ways that we can monetize that, and what products do we have at our disposal, and what things can we build? And between those things, we were extremely successful. I think that type of thinking does not propagate through all traditional media companies, and the need to do so, which was previously, I would say, almost heretical, the idea that editorial and monetization should work together. I'm not suggesting that the editorial should be compromised, but I do think that there is a partnership that needs to be at play in order to ensure survival, and that partnership will align the needs of the user and the reader and the demographic characteristics of the user and the reader with the kinds of ways that that reader can, in effect, pay for that good content. So the main thing that needs to change, I think, is an attitude of partnership between editorial groups and monetization. And then the second thing, which goes hand in hand with that, is an investment of capital and the ability to upskill the organization so they're not dependent on the sort of third-party ad tech infrastructure for just handing dollar bills that are bigger than the dollar bills they handed them last year. Instead, learning the skills about how to generate those dollar bills yourself. And many organizations are just learning how to do that.
Well, I think one thing that we look at when we look at 2021 is that the markets didn't react exactly the way we thought they would in response to this pandemic, in response to a massive change in the White House only at this point. So next year we're looking at, I mean, obviously we're talking about a vaccine in small scale now, but by spring of 2021, in large scale, the vaccines being available and working their way through the populace. What do we expect, though? Obviously, there's no dead cat bounce in any of these stock markets to be had because the markets just didn't do that. We now have a Democratic president. We have the vaccine on the way. What do you think the impact will be, if any, since we seem to be fairly resilient this year?
Yeah, I think that's true. But you look a little bit under the surface. I mean, there are a lot of people suffering. The largest companies, primarily technology companies and retailers, have benefited because they've been allowed to stay open. They've been able to benefit from people's ability to shop. I mean, how many small businesses were closed when Walmart was open? How many small businesses were closed when Amazon was open? But you're right, the markets on an overall basis have done well. I think that with a vaccine, there's obviously going to be pent up demand for all of those things that that have been hurt by the lockdowns and the closures. In terms of politics, I think that right now, and look, I mean, this is an area where anyone's guess is as good as anyone's guess, but I think what has driven a lot of businesses' confidence and ability to invest has been, you know, the reduction of regulation and the reduction of taxes and the perception of a sort of business-friendly administration. Now, to the extent that Biden's presidency is able to continue the good parts of that and deal with any parts that they think are not productive, then it will continue. And I think that the fact that the Senate and there's potential for, you know, not having Democrats be able to enact all of their agendas, which obviously some of which are not completely pro-business, that people are to some degree confident that there's going to be a continuation of an environment where that's possible. I do believe that there is a huge pent-up demand, and it was reflected in the numbers for retail spending on Black Friday. And there's a lot of people that are staying home, and to the extent they're still working, they're saving money, they're not spending on the other things to spend on. And if we're all allowed to go back out, there's going to be a heck of a lot of vacations booked and travel flown and meals eaten and drinks drunk. That's my belief. I think that 2021 is going to look fantastic if there's a vaccine.
Yeah, I think so as well, and you do bring up a good point. It almost slipped my mind that no vacations this year for my family. Lots of staycations here in the great state of Texas. Well, Ian, I want to thank you for your time here today. It's been incredible speaking with you, and I so appreciate your insights. Any closing thoughts you want to leave us with, Ian?
I guess the one thing I would say is that there's a growing empowerment happening among retail or among people, and that's affecting the investing market, it's affecting the media market. There's a growing desire to learn how to do things on your own, and that's a good thing. And I think to the extent that the media industry and the financial media industry and the financial technology industry are helping to support and empower that in positive ways, then we're all going to look forward to a much better financial life than I think our parents and grandparents had when they were reliant on more traditional and more limited options.
Well, once again, we are speaking with Ian Rosen, and obviously a fintech and finmedia guru and icon. If you would like to learn more about Ian or reach out and communicate with him, you can do so at twitter.com. Go to Twitter and reach out to Ian Rosen, I-A-N, last name Rosen, R-O-S-E-N. Ian, thanks again for your time here today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, for Ian Rosen, this is Stuart Smith saying stay tuned for our next episode right here at the Stock to Me podcast, brought to you by the Investor Brand Network.
The following Stock to Me podcast was an Investor Brand Network audio production. IBN is a financial news and publishing company delivering a new generation of corporate communication solutions, including news aggregation and syndication, social communication, and enhanced news release services. Investor Brand Network may receive payments for corporate communications relations as well as various press releases and social media solutions provided to its clients. IBN holds no shares of any company named on the IBN sites, brands, and/or podcasts. To be clear, all officers, directors, and independent contractors of Investor Brand Network hold zero positions in and do not trade or intend to trade the securities for their own accounts. This interview is not an offer or recommendation to buy or sell securities. Information in this broadcast is presented solely for informative purposes and is not intended to be, or should it be construed as, investment advice. As in all investments, investment in the featured company carries an investment risk. Listeners should review the company thoroughly with the registered investment advisor or registered stockbroker. This podcast audio interview by Investor Brand Network is not intended to be a complete study of the featured company or other companies mentioned. Information used and statements of fact have been obtained from featured company and other sources, but not verified nor guaranteed by Investor Brand Network as to completeness and accuracy. Such information is subject to change without notice. Please see our full disclaimers and disclosures at investorbrandnetwork.com.